Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We have reached episode 14 of Faking Movies. I am Lee.
It's just pure insanity that we've made it this far.
Yeah.
It's just too much fun to quit, you guys.
It is.
That's, yep, accurate.
Well, that, of course, is my dear friend Seth.
I say hello.
Oh, that's a little bit of a spoiler. We're also joined, as always, by our dear friend Zach.
Oh, hello.
Ooh, getting very genteel up in here.
Gonna be a sultry episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't even know. You don't even know. It's the humidity is gonna drip like molasses.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Yikes.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. So our movie this time, Lee is faking Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. Which is directed by Clint Eastwood, but Lee, what else did we give you?
So, you gave me John Cusack, Kevin Spacey, Jude Law, Allison Eastwood, and someone named Lady Chablis.
Lady Chablis!
Boy, what a cast!
And I gotta say, when I sat down to write this, I told you guys this, I'm glad I looked at my list again, because I forgot about Jude Law, and he really just opened everything up for me.
Yep.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, not to correct you, but I believe it's the Lady Chablis, yeah. I think, technically. Yep.
The one there and only.
Yeah, there is certainly an article on the beginning of her name.
I see. Well, you didn't
There may be multiple. This is the one, for sure.
Yeah. Yes. It's important.
It is. Crucially important.
Well, I'm also, like, just so glad that you guys gave me the director, too, because I vaguely remember as, like, a youthish person, like, seeing the title of this movie places, which is why I assume it's Southern, because I feel like I have a Southern feeling from it.
But I thought it was a horror movie, to be honest.
Like, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, too.
But it's a horror title for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
But like knowing that Clint Eastwood, that just deranged motherfucker, directed this was very important to my vision.
Yeah, makes sense.
I can see that. Yeah. All right, well, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, just jump right in, dude.
Sure. And I think I was telling you guys this earlier when I first wrote my outline here. Most of my outline is just telling you what the characters are and then just skip right to the end. So true Faking Movies fashion.
That's perfect. What we do best.
Don't get bogged down in that plot.
Nope. Yep.
All right. So we're on an old Southern plantation. I'm thinking it might be the 1960s, so we can get those really good 60s fashions mixed in with this old Southern genteel kind of look.
Beautiful. I like it.
Yeah. The Southern gentry, like, you can feel the just generations of hatred and inbreeding just literally dripping off the screen.
Whoa. Okay.
Damn. Woo.
It's, and much like a lot of actual Southern racism, it's unspoken by the racists. All right, so we're at this big Southern old family mansion, you know, there's help everywhere, all kinds of people milling about. They have this enormous crazy fucking garden, and it's a big party, obviously, and there's been a murder.
Yep, naturally.
Now I want you guys to like get in the mindset that, you know, all the dudes in this movie are wearing white dinner jackets with their tuxedos, you know.
It's white tie, not even black tie. It's white tie.
Oh yeah, this is mad fancy. Also, like, the movie needs to be so sticky, like, I want you to feel the molasses between your fingers as you're watching it.
So like everybody's sweaty also?
Oh yeah. There's so much dabbing of flop sweat with kerchiefs, with like monogrammed kerchiefs in this movie.
I was imagining like a DVD manufacturing process where you put them in the case and then you like squirt some syrup on top of it and seal it all shut. And you're like, hey, fuck everybody that buys this. Good luck.
It's the first DVD case.
I get it.
It's the first DVD case with technology to prevent it from crystallizing. So the molasses stays so runny.
Yeah. Perfect. Great. Love it.
All right. So
this is gross.
Yeah.
It's just gross.
The reason I'm doing this horrible voice is because...
Oh, I think we know. I think we're well aware. I think it's
pretty well established. Yeah.
So,
but go ahead and say.
Kevin Spacey is a writer. He is at this party. Think like vaguely Truman Capote, but with the voice of Frank Underwood. And he happens to be the narrator, so we're gonna get a lot of "Dear Reader," and not in like a stupid House of Cards looking at the camera kind of way, more like in a voiceover type kind of situation. Wait,
but we love looking at the camera. Like mugging at the camera is definitely in the faking movies modus operandi.
Listen, I'm saving it. True. Okay,
let okay, me. Okay, sure.
We'll get there. Okay. We'll get there.
Okay. Okay. I will let the creator create.
Thank you. So John Cusack is the investigator that gets called in, because we get called in as like, you know, everyone has, they've discovered this murder has occurred and the wheels are in motion to try to like solve it. So Cusack is the investigator, and in my heart of hearts, I'm not strong enough to listen to him attempt a Southern accent. I'm just not. I love John Cusack, but fucking shit, I can't deal with that. So he's a Yankee. A Yankee was in our midst.
Fully support this decision. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Spacey is going to not just be our narrator, he's also going to act as like the tour guide to Cusack. He's gonna like introduce him to the Southern customs and all the people, because he knows everything that's going on here. Okay. And eventually we come to learn that he may know a little more about the murder than he's leading on.
Bum bum bum.
Exactly. So I assume the Lady Chablis is literally like an old lady. She is old gentry. She is the matriarch of this family. She's super proper.
I take it you did not look up the Lady Chablis.
Lady Chablis.
I did not. I did not at
that's
all.
That's a shame. Yeah. Okay.
it's a shame. It definitely it could have colored your story in a very interesting way.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Well, that's what faking movies is all about. Getting it fucking wrong as shit.
That's true. Yep. That's true.
No worries there.
Yeah. All right. Go on.
Okay, so she's the matriarch of the family. She's super proper, and she just wants to get she wants to get everyone off of her property. It's so scandalous what's happened here. And like at first we're kind of like, oh, that's pretty shitty, what a bitch, until we realize how shitty it is, because it's her daughter that was murdered. She's more upset about the disturbance at her house than, you know, that like her party was interrupted, than the death of her daughter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of the daughter, it's Allison Eastwood. And I decided to name her Claire because, you know, of course I did.
It's a bit lazy, but all right. Yeah.
It's easier to House of Cards your way through this.
Yeah. So I think Allison Eastwood is going to play the daughter, because I think she might actually be Clint Eastwood's daughter, and he's a real sick fuck, and he always tortures his daughter figures in movies. Like, no daughter makes it out of a Clint Eastwood movie without being at least paralyzed.
Wait, you're questioning whether a person named Allison Eastwood is real-life Clint Eastwood's daughter?
Yeah.
How many Eastwoods have you ever met in your entire life?
Do you think it's Back to the Future Part 3 and they have to name the valley after the famous Eastwood family?
A Frisbee also, pie plate?
Notably, Clint Eastwood has about 1,000 kids, so...
Yeah. Well, I know Scott's an actor, so I figure I'd make the leap.
Yep. I think they're all vaguely actor-ish, yeah.
They're Hollywood-related, in any case.
Okay.
So, since it's his, I assume, his real-life daughter, she's going to play the daughter in the movie.
It is his real-life daughter, okay. Just say that.
And she's also going to get just brutally murdered.
Cool.
It's naturally bad. And the only downside...
Bad lieutenant.
Ooh.
Oh, God.
the only downside to this is she's going to exist mostly as a corpse and through, like, anecdotes that other characters tell us. So I really hope that she wasn't expecting to do much acting in this movie because it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Sure.
Jude Law is the son of the lady and the brother of Allison. He is impossibly debonair. He's so charming, but he's really broken up by the murder. Like, throughout the movie, every time we see him, he's getting drunker and falling apart emotionally. And this really displeases his mother, is something we're going to notice throughout. So, the movie is mostly the investigation. There's a lot of weird scenes in this, like, straight-up Versailles-level garden that's happening. Like, a lot of... I think, like, not surreal camera work because it's Clint Eastwood, but there's going to be some weird atmospheric shit going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's lots of twists and turns in the investigation. And throughout this, we're going to meet all the guests at the party, and the people at the party are going to be a who's who of character actors and actresses from the 90s.
Oh. That is an excellent choice.
Yeah, just to shoehorn as many notable faces in as we possibly
David
can.
David Arquette is at this party? Why?
What's Brendan Fraser doing here?
Nev Campbell, no!
Yeah, so we're going to meet all these different people who were guests at the party and who work on the estate. And Cusack
Andy
is
Dick, where did he come from?
Ooh.
Oh yeah, Dick show. Bad Lieutenant style, Andy Dick's jerking off in the corner.
as he does. So throughout this investigation, Cusack is going to be continually befuddled. Like he did, like every bit of evidence he gets leads him down one path, and that path takes him somewhere in a totally opposite direction. He can't make heads or tails of this, and a lot of it is the cultural differences. But a lot of it is, as I mentioned, we're getting the sense that Kevin Spacey knows a little bit too much and is maybe leading people away from the truth. We start to suspect that it may have been him. Well, this leads, we're going to jump now to the end where we find out that Kevin Spacey does, in fact, have a secret. The secret isn't that he murdered Claire. The secret is he is gay with one of the butlers on the estate. And I think I really like John Turturro for this character.
That's a solid
choice. Yeah.
A Mr. Deeds throwback. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Wait, is he also in Defeat a bunch? Because
is he like, what?
I'm sorry. You can go full Deeds on that one.
I mean, let's let John Turturro have like a moment or two.
All right.
We want him to be. We want the audience to know that he's there, but we don't want it to be like a huge thing.
Okay.
So he's the actor, or he's the character from Barton Fink.
Yeah, a little closer to Barton Fink, maybe.
I mean, that makes sense. Yeah.
You know what I was actually thinking? I was thinking his character in the Adam Sandler classic Anger Management.
I haven't seen it.
It's terrible.
Are you sure you're not thinking of Mr. Deeds?
No. In Anger Management, he's one of the guys in his anger group, and I really like the way he says the word sausage, so that's we're going to have him do that again.
Oh, boy.
We'll be the old sausage.
That John Turturro is a real chameleon. He's great.
Everybody loves John Turturro.
The CBS sitcom, yeah.
God, like, so much of this is going to get cut.
No,
Turturro talk is poison.
All right.
Barton Fink.
Barton Fink. Barton. Okay.
Oh. Christ. It's a really good joke from the
Simpsons. Yes, it is. sure. Classic. Okay, so we find out that his secret isn't that he killed Clara. It's that he is secretly gay. And since this is the past, that's a huge fucking deal. And it also happens to be someone who's lower class than him. Now that's, we learn now, as you know, Cusack is questioning him because he's the only person that seems to know what's going on, that he's afraid, he does know who killed her, but he's afraid that he's going to get murdered if he gives up the truth of what happened. And the truth of what happened is,
was it Lady Shibley?
It was the Lady Shibley.
Oh my God.
And the reason why he doesn't want to roll over on her is because she, until Cusack figured it out, was the only person who knew he was gay and threatened to expose him.
Yep, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah.
Now,
yep.
Cusack hasn't quite figured this out yet. This questioning scene is getting really intense. It's rising, and you can tell that Cusack's about to snap, and he's gonna do something rash in the garden. And he's in the middle of
the garden
of good and evil. Yeah. He's in the middle of threatening Kevin Spacey when Jude Law stumbles out drunk. And he reveals that his mother did it. Now,
Then I forgot who Jude Law was in this for a while.
He's the brother of the murdered girl.
Yeah. Yep.
So he reveals that his mother is the one who killed Claire. But then he also reveals why. Lady Chablis killed her own daughter.
Yes.
Because she was having an incestuous relationship with her brother, Jude Law.
Oh, boy.
Whoa.
Yeah.
We got some cruel intentions up in here.
Yeah, see, for the real. Thing is, this is old Southern gentry, but he's the last in the line. He is the family's hope. You see, the Lady Chablis had ideas for her son. He was meant to be governor. So,
I'm gonna have to speed that part up in the actual recording because your drawl is just so.
It's
so.
Like laughter.
Oh boy.
It's good. After Jude Law reveals all of this and like Cusack is visibly shaken, we hear a gunshot and then we see the blood pattern show up on Jude Law's white dinner jacket. And he drops to the ground dead. And it's Lady Chablis standing a few paces back. She shot her own son. She killed him. She killed both of her children tonight. Oof. And then...
Damn!
She fires at John Cusack, but she misses.
Oh.
And in the hubbub, John Turturro, from behind, with the candlestick. And he kills her.
Wonderful.
By hitting her... You know, in the head from behind with the candlestick.
Yeah.
And as she dies, her body falls over that of her son. Oof. And a pool of blood spills onto their family crest on the ground.
Oh, man. No.
Good job.
And as that shot, as we see that shot, as we're like fading out from that, we get the ending voiceover from Kevin Spacey.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Sticks his face into the middle of the screen and says, "Dear reader, that is when midnight told the last great Southern family in the garden of good and evil."
I mean, shit, that's a real movie.
Yeah. That's solid. Yeah, that's
so that was my Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Yeah. Okay,
so what actually happens?
So wait.
Well, you hit a bunch of major.
I mean, it's fucking Southern Gothic. Like,
wait, first question.
Yeah.
Did you see this movie and forget that you saw it? Because you hit a lot of weirdly specific points.
Like John Turturro plays a butler who's
John
Turturro
is not
Spacey.
In it, but Kevin Spacey like is one of the main characters and is also secretly gay, or maybe not so secretly gay.
yeah
I mean, it's a Kevin Spacey movie.
Yeah
He's either secretly gay, secretly a criminal, or secretly a cat. Like, those are the three things he does.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Did you just talk about knives?
Well,
I definitely Kevin, watched
that tour de force.
Kevin Spacey's going to be listening to this podcast going, God damn it, I knew I shouldn't have done that one.
I watched part of that on TV. It was bad.
I've seen that whole garbage
show.
Oh,
shit.
The whole thing.
Yeah. Oh,
seems regrettable.
Okay, so.
It is. But I've wasted a lot of my life. Like watching.
Would you say like 7 or 8 of them? Maybe, probably. Yeah.
Oh, that took me a while.
Oh, yeah.
You dirty son of a bitch.
Jeez.
Yikes.
All right. So, what?
I'm on my last. All right. One.
So, what? Before we explain this movie, it is based on a book, obviously.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. This book was a New York Times bestseller for 216 weeks.
Wow.
To put that in perspective, that is 4.14 years, which is inexplicably long for a book to be at the top of the bestsellers list.
Especially, am I guessing that it's a mystery?
Yeah, sort of.
Okay.
So this book came out like 3 years before the movie, I think. It was still on top when the movie came out. But it is the longest running bestseller of New York Times list of all time.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take that, so... Bible.
Yeah, right. No, the Bible has just been running under the radar for about 2,000 years.
I mean, the New Testament.
Fair
point. Do you want the IMDb one sentence summary?
Of course, I do.
All right. So, a visiting city reporter's assignment suddenly revolves around the murder trial of a local millionaire whom he befriends.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you were right about Cusack being a Yank, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. So, he's the reporter, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kevin Spacey is the sort of very charismatic, but also secretly gay main character.
So kind of like Dylan Baker in The Good Wife.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Dylan Baker, is he gay in The Midwife?
No, but he's very charismatic and like continually murders people.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Right. No. Well, the only similarity then is that he's charismatic.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, so, if you use those two traits, we could be describing the movie Seven, also starring Kevin Spacey.
Yeah. It's true.
Kevin Spacey has these very famous Christmas parties in Savannah, Georgia. Savannah features heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And
the molasses is almost as thick there as it is in New Orleans.
Yeah. So I noted this, right. So this is in Savannah, but it is basically New Orleans. Like, I've never known Savannah to be like this, but like basically everyone is pretty awesome. Like, there's a bunch of weird eccentric characters. All the buildings are like charmingly old and fun. All the people are very eccentric and not in like a crazy person shouting at the sun kind of way, but like in a you'd want to drink with them at the bar kind of way.
Okay.
And they all are constantly drunk. And every time anyone leaves a bar in this city, they give them a roadie in a solo cup.
which it's wonderful.
The best.
Oh, when does this movie take place?
It's the mid-90s, I think.
Oh, yeah, so it's like...
I think it's... Well, okay, so it's based on... Like, the book was based on real events that took place in about the mid-80s.
Okay.
Wait, really? Real events?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah,
okay.
I think the lead character vaguely actually existed.
Frank Underwood, I think, is...
Yep, Frank Underwood.
He became the president.
Against all odds.
Spoilers.
He beat the murder rap, yeah.
I haven't watched all seasons.
I thought you meant spoilers for the movie.
So you've watched 7 episodes so far, huh?
Nah, I've watched all that. Oh, I've watched that whole thing. But yeah, it is based on real events. And there was some famous millionaire in a murder trial, and it took like 3 trials, and then he was acquitted. But...
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So I'm assuming he gets off at the end.
Yeah, he does. John Cusack himself says about Savannah, he's calling his editor, because The whole murder thing happens. We'll get to that. He's calling his editor, who's calling him home and saying, like, no, you're done with this story or whatever. And Cusack's like, no, there's a book in this. I got to write a book. And Cusack says, it's like Gone with the Wind on mescaline, which I think does accurately represent the version of Savannah that is portrayed in this movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty fun.
Yeah.
It was. This was a fun movie.
It was really good.
I will say right now, yeah. I actually like this movie.
Yeah,
see,
so
I expected, I'm not surprised to hear that you guys liked it. I'm surprised to hear it was fun, though.
Well, okay, so, like, Zach and I were talking about this earlier, but, like, it's fun for, like, the first half, but this movie is long.
It is, I believe, 2 hours, 35 minutes. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. So, like, it's fun and it's interesting for the first, like, 90 minutes, because you're, like, meeting all of these super eclectic, strange residents of Savannah.
Yep.
And then it just starts to get tedious, I guess.
Yep. Well, so I guess we blew this. There's a murder. We'll get back to that. But they,
yeah.
Seth and I were talking about this today. There's a lot of courtroom scenes, and much like A Few Good Men, when any movie enters a courtroom, they unnecessarily pad everything out and make it super long and have a lot of procedural bullshit. And like literally an hour of this movie was just like, you could skip the whole thing and just like go to the like guilty, not guilty part. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. If you made like a modern edit of it, you would just cut out all of the courtroom scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to get to the hot parts.
Yeah.
So Seth, you want to give us like actual plot bits?
What I can remember of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So Kevin Spacey, his name is Jim, right?
Probably.
I think it's Jim. Okay. It's Jim. So, he has this big soiree, and everybody in town, all of the upper crust are invited and everything, and it goes, you know, as you would expect, people talking about their husbands blowing their brains out, and,
The upper crust, as you know, is always the most delectable part of the bread.
Okay. No, that's an interesting point, though. So, like, it is a very high-class thing, and, like, Lee, you touched on this in your version, where, like, there's sort of a lot of formality, and, like, Lady Chablis in your version didn't want to, like, you know, let on airs or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, there's half that in this, and then half, like, everybody's just going full New Orleans on it, and, like, they're all just getting
drunken
fucked
street
up,
lunatics, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a fun mix, yeah.
Yeah, so we have Kevin Spacey's soiree, and then we meet John Cusack's love interest, though she's really not that important, I feel.
Not even close. Could have been left out entirely, yes.
Yeah, so there's a tedious romantic subplot, of course, because there always is.
Naturally. Yep.
Anyway, everybody leaves the party, and then, suddenly we hear a bunch of police outside of Cusack's apartment or his rented room or whatever. And we find out that Kevin Spacey shot someone.
Ooh.
And it was a character that we had seen earlier, which was Jude Law, who, like, busted into the
there
party.
There he is.
Yeah, so Jude Law, earlier during the soiree, just, like, busts in there and is drunk and, like, threatens both Cusack and Kevin Spacey with a... With a face shredder, you know.
Yep.
One of those good old fashioned broken bottles.
Yep.
So well, this was his secret lover, I would assume.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yep. Uh-huh.
Well, so we meet Jude Law outside of Kevin Spacey's amazing house. John Cusack walks up to the house before he meets Kevin Spacey. And Jude Law is outside polishing a vintage Camaro, and he has a Confederate flag tattoo on his arm. And
sure
so
does.
It's like the least Jude Law possible universe.
Yeah. Now, does he have on really short white shorts?
No, I think they're jeans, but like, you know, cut off like t-shirt.
Yeah,
sure.
Right. Cut off t-shirt. Right.
He's also like a baby in this movie. He's like not a day over 16. He's probably
crazy.
Like 25, but like, yeah.
He was always just tiny. He's too beautiful for us. That's the problem.
I know, yeah. For this world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
For us monsters.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so, anyway, go ahead.
Danny DeVito-esque trolls. Okay, so Kevin Spacey, well, shoots Jude Law and claims that it was in self-defense because Jude Law had already come in and was, like, drunk and breaking shit, and so it's claimed that he shot him in self-defense. And then we start getting more into the, like, the investigation. So, apparently John Cusack and Kevin Spacey are friends now.
Immediately.
So,
inexplicably, yeah. Immediately, yeah.
Well, it's just so yeah. Much charm, you know?
Yeah, true. Yeah. True.
That southern and, wit.
And, and there is, without a doubt, a Chekhov's gun in this. Right at the beginning.
Ah.
They find, like Kevin Spacey is showing John Cusack, like, a dagger that was used to kill Rasputin.
Yep.
And right next to it is a loaded German Luger.
Yep.
How do I even choose?
Like, well, so we have to go back on this. Kevin Spacey has like immeasurable wealth in this movie. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah. So they're sitting in his living room with a bunch of people around. And John Cusack goes, "Is that a Fabergé egg?" And Kevin Spacey basically goes, "Yeah, did you not see the other two Fabergé eggs over here?"
Yeah. And he's like, "Oh, yeah, and there's a cigarette box and like so like
is that where all the missing Fabergé eggs went? They're on the set of this fucking movie."
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I do love me some Fabergé, but
of course.
I found that part a little bit difficult to believe.
Yeah, yeah. But and there's a book from Napoleon's christening, and then the Rasputin death dagger, and then the German Luger is sort of the pinnacle. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and
wait a second, Zach. Can you plug this joke into when we were still talking about Fabergé eggs so it doesn't sound so out of place? I prefer his bacon.
What? Oh, bacon. Okay, yeah.
Oh, you bet.
Oh God, you're the worst. All right.
You know.
Yeah, I'll definitely plug that in for sure. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, because
no, it's better where it is. It's so much worse where it is. Explanation and all.
Because Fabergé only made those stupid eggs. He didn't make, you know, a lot of really fascinating glasswork or whatever.
All right.
Yeah. I'm just saying, there's a...
Okay. Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
So, Kevin Spacey is unimaginably rich.
But he's nouveau riche.
Yes.
Oh.
Which is the really interesting part, is that he's not old money, he's nouveau riche. He just really is good at exploiting people when they're down.
Yes.
So he's made a lot of enemies.
They make a point of telling this in the movie, like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So after this, it's basically Kevin Spacey eventually ends up being arrested and charged with murder one or whatever.
Yep.
And then most of the movie is John Cusack running around town, running around Savannah, like meeting these weird eccentric people, trying to figure out what the backstory was of Jude Law and, Kevin Spacey. Mm-hmm. And also it's interspliced with Kevin Spacey's trial.
Yeah. Okay. Right, so the main thing here, so Kevin Spacey came down, I think for like, what was the magazine? It was like Home Country or like Food and Wine or some bullshit.
It was Home and Garden?
Yeah, Home and Garden, I'd say.
It doesn't matter.
That's a nice tie-in.
So he came down to cover Frank Underwood's Christmas party, as it were. and then this whole murder thing happens. And that's
he does nothing but he's a puff piece journalist and he found himself.
Yeah.
Well, so this is where we find out. He's like a mercenary journalist. And then, Kevin Spacey is like, is this your first time to Savannah? And he's like, yeah, for sure. And then, John Cusack finds his own book on his bookshelf and he's like, oh, weird. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Spacey's like, oh, yeah, what a coincidence that my book or your book is on my bookshelf. And he's like, did you request me for this? And Kevin Spacey's like, yeah, of course. So there's like some weird sexual tension between them early.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's, and so like, the rest of the plot is this stupid court drama that I don't particularly care about. Yeah. But let's get to the two important parts of this movie.
Yes, yes, yes.
The voodoo lady yep. is this... and the Lady Chablis.
Yes.
Oh, they're different people. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. Oh, they are by far, right. like, the best part of this movie. And it's why I love this movie.
Start on Voodoo Lady, because Voodoo yeah. Lady shows up very early in this movie.
Yeah. So Kevin Spacey, like, has a resident voodoo lady.
Just on retainer?
Kind of.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yep. So what was the reason they went to the graveyard in the first place?
I don't oh, perfect. Recall.
There was no explicit reason. I think it was to impress John Cusack, honestly.
Okay. Yeah. So Kevin Spacey takes John Cusack to the grave. He's like, I want to show you something. Yep. I think it was something as flimsy as that. Yep. Then they meet the voodoo lady, and he produces all of this, like, voodoo accoutrement, like, water that had never been through a pipe.
Yep.
And, shiny dimes.
Some rainwater. And...
yeah, I mean, sure.
Well,
but,
you can never really know, but yeah.
There's no way. Yeah, every water has been through a pipe at some point, like...
Well, I mean, statistically, maybe, okay. yeah, it's...
Well, the voodoo lady would know if it had been.
Right, right, she would feel it. Yes. That's true. Yeah.
They explicitly say that.
Mm. Let's skip over voodoo lady. Let's get to the Lady Chablis. This is the... Okay, she is the best part of this movie.
Okay, so I'll just say the voodoo lady is super fun yeah. and it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And now we'll get to the Lady Chablis. Oh. Who, oh man, she is the shining star of this movie.
Oh yeah.
I love her so much. So
she's a regular Martin Short in Get Over It.
Well,
yeah.
To an audience that is only you, yes.
Yeah. So the Lady Chablis is an African American transsexual.
Yep.
Okay.
Who is also a lounge singer.
Yep.
Okay.
And
in retrospect, I should have at least done like guessed at the lounge singer aspect.
Well, that's why I asked. Yeah, you couldn't have gotten that part more wrong. But man, the real life version of La Lady Chablis is just the best. It's the best.
Which is this woman's actual name?
Yeah.
She legally changed her name to this,
and I think her actual occupation. Like, I think this is what she does in real life. Yeah.
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 And she just, like, is the sassiest, mm-hmm. most interesting person in this entire movie by far. Yep.
She's also, old-ish. She's, I would say, 50s, probably?
I think she was in her late 40s.
Late 40s, 50, yeah.
She died quite early.
Okay.
Well, no, she died in, like, 2000, like, mid-2000s.
Okay.
But,
okay.
She died when she was only in her mid to late 50s.
Okay, yeah.
Aw.
Yeah.
But, oof. Oh man, I don't even know where to begin.
So let me ask a question. Did Clint Eastwood, did his directing, did he make a joke of her, or was she treated like with respect?
No. Surprisingly not. Yeah, so Clint Eastwood, noted conservative, like, I can't imagine, even in the 90s, I can't imagine
he real piece of shit.
This. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. So she's like a bit character for a while, but then like second half of this movie, holy shit, she comes to play. Like there are one of the best scenes in this movie, she and John Cusack befriend one another because she has she lived with Jude Law, who is now deceased, murdered.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so John Cusack is interested in talking to her because she knew about Jude Law. They hang out a bit, and Lady Chablis is real sassy, and like, I don't know how it even comes up, but there's some like Southern black fraternity or black, it's a black, what's the thing?
It's like a debutante.
Yes.
Or something.
You're right.
Yeah.
So he gets invited to this, and Lady Chablis is like, you have to take me to this. And she's a real fucking loose cannon, so he's like...
And this is Cusack she's speaking to, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so she's a real loose cannon, and Cusack's like, I don't want to offend these people. Like, I want to get information from these people because they, like, you know, like, that's my whole job, basically.
Yeah.
It was somehow tangentially related to his investigation.
So she, like, eventually convinces him to take her... and they go, and she is just out of control. Like, she's sitting on high school dude's laps and then dancing with John. She's dancing with this high school kid who's the brother of one of the debutantes. And John Cusack is so uncomfortable that he cuts in and slow dances with her and is like, you need to calm down.
it's implied to like get her off the floor that he kisses her.
Right,
like, so there's this dip and...
Yeah, he kisses her, and then it's also implied when they're leaving that she goes, will you come back to my place, which is like an inherent sexual invitation, and he goes, no.
Right.
And then she's like, well, then I'm going to stay, and he goes, okay.
Yeah.
Not necessarily winning any GLAAD awards, but still not like
what I mean, would have expected the 90s,
from Clint Eastwood.
Like, well, yeah.
I don't know. She was a very, like, powerful, confident woman.
And she was highlighted, like, a fair amount. She wasn't, like, a tangential character. Like, she was actually in there. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I thought it was... I really liked it. Yeah. I thought it was, like, solid, especially for the mid-90s.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, like, in the 90s, all the gay characters were like, I'm very gay, look at me! And, like, she...
Yeah.
She was, like, herself... And, like, also not, like, a spectacle. And, yeah, like, it was honestly pretty good. And especially for Clint Eastwood, as we've been saying,
So the Lady Shibley is the important
part. Yeah, mostly.
and the voodoo lady.
Yeah.
So the title comes from the like, voodoo ritual involving midnight, where the hour before midnight is the time for doing good voodoo, and the hour after midnight is for doing evil voodoo.
I'm really glad I would not have thought to ask what the meaning of the title was.
So I'll note, I watched this in one sitting, and Seth, I think you watched this in two sittings, right?
It was two. Yeah,
so I basically blacked out from just apathy at like the 90 minute mark when I watched it. I think I know how this ended, but like, can you take us through the end? Like,
the end is essentially that
so you also suffered from the thing I did.
We have Frank Underwood, essentially, and he's about to come clean that Jude Law, when he picked up the Luger, like, couldn't figure out the safety, and Jude Law just picked up his gun and just shot it to death. And then made it look like there was an exchange of fire instead of just straight up shooting a man who was pointing a weapon.
Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So Spacey, like, definitely killed him, and the circumstances were sort of what was under question, right?
Yeah. What was it, self-defense, or was it cold-blooded?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Right. Yeah. And also, Cusack figures this out. Like, Cusack, I think, like, an hour from the end, Cusack is like, oh, shit, Kevin Spacey is not the guy I thought he was. Like,
oh, so it's a regular Heat where everything important happens an hour before the ending.
Yeah, sort of. It's kind of a twist there, but so Kevin Spacey is about to tell the truth because he's about to go up on the stand, and then they come in with evidence that the reason why there was no residue from shooting a gun on Jude Law's hands is because his hands were bagged as evidence after he went to the hospital.
Right,
so anybody could have wiped off the supposed residue.
You know what that's called? That's a reasonable doubt right there.
It sure is.
Well, but so this gets back to Lee's version a bit, where it's like the South is like stereotypically shady, where it's like you know, if you know the right people, like you can grease some palms and it'll all sort of work itself out. Like, it was, there was a lot of that implication, I think,
But essentially, Kevin Spacey is acquitted, and then we, like, flash forward to, like, a month later or whatever, a couple of weeks later, and he's gonna have a Christmas party, and John Cusack's like, I'm not gonna go to that. And then he goes and he he shacks up with Allison Eastwood. And then Kevin Spacey has a heart attack.
Oh, that's a lot of plot right at the end.
Yeah.
And he dies in the room where Jude Law died. Yep,
right.
And, like, they fall down next to each other, and we see a ghost Jude Law, like, look up and smile at him and then go
back.
Oh,
so I kind of got that right, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's ghost murder. Mm-hmm. I mean, pretty, yeah. The ghost probably jumped up and grabbed his heart and was like,
just give me a little bit of a squeeze.
Yeah, and that's what killed Kevin Spacey.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, yeah. For that like last hour that could have been shortened by almost 90%, they mm-hmm. sure did squeeze a whole bunch of stuff right into that last like 3 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. So, yeah. What do you guys think? Are we ready to do some ratings?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, let's go ahead and go to ratings.
What's the IMDb?
IMDb, I think, was 6.6. Oof,
okay.
Let me check that. 6.6.
Interesting.
And that's 3,300 or 33,000.
Wow, that's a lot of ratings.
Pretty low.
Yeah.
For a book that was the number one bestseller of all time, like that.
Yeah.
It seems low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does to me as well, because I actually like this movie.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, so go ahead, Seth. What do you think?
Okay, so for the actual movie, I'm going to give it an 8.
Okay.
Which is probably my highest rating.
Easily. I think almost certainly your highest rating.
Yeah.
Yeah. My only complaint is that it started to get tedious there in the middle, but I enjoyed the plot. I enjoyed the characters. I enjoyed how weird it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. For Lee's, I also quite enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Yeah, because like I have a soft spot for like weird Southern Gothic murder mysteries. So it had a coherent plot, and I really like that. So I'm gonna give it like a 7.9.
Ooh.
Well, I'll tip my hat to you, good sir.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, now it's a 7.7.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, so, again, Seth, I think, watched this over 2 days, and I blasted mm-hmm. through it, but, like, we both very much enjoyed this movie. I remember seeing this as like a teenager, like before my brain was fully solidified, and I remember mm-hmm. liking it then. And then based on my tastes as a teenager in general and the gothiness that I used to do, I assumed that I was wrong, but I was right. It turns out, like, it,
sure,
yeah, it was really good. So yeah, I agree. To quote Leonard Maltin, it suffered from over length, I think.
sure.
Yeah, it was. They could have cut out like a bunch of the last hour. Probably made it like a tight 125. I would say.
Probably.
Also, yeah, all of Eastwood Daughter, like that whole thing, is meaningless.
That whole subplot was completely.
Yeah,
ancillary.
Cusack doesn't need a love interest at all. Like. No, not even close.
Really doesn't. Yeah. I think it was put in there to establish that he was absolutely, without a doubt, heterosexual.
I mean, yeah, probably.
Yeah, like, that might have been in Cusack's rider.
Because there was a lot of trans and there was a lot of gay characters.
There were.
I think in the 90s you had to establish that your leading man was as straight as an arrow.
Which is weird, though, because, again, like, they do gay and trans really well in this movie. Like, for the 90s, this was, like, genuinely pretty okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that, like, that's a thing about a lot of Southern set, like, literature and movies where there are these people who exist on kind of the edges of polite society, and they're allowed to be there as long as they're not the hero at the end, you know, as long as we know that, yes, this exists, but it's not the main thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Sure. So you mentioned, Lee, that, Kevin Spacey was like a Truman Capote character. And I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. Pretty much. Pretty much. Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I agree. I think like solid 8, like besides the length, not a bad movie at all. Yeah.
Yeah, enjoyable to watch for once.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. No, well, Jack Nicholson. Fucking
yeah,
great.
I fucked up not watching this one, huh?
Bonus points.
Yeah. What do you give Lee's?
Yeah, so I thought Lee's was pretty good too. I mean, honestly, yeah, it was fairly similar. So yeah, it seemed reasonable. I think a little bit less of the like weird twisted drama, but it did have a bit of the Cruel Intentions, which is fun.
Yeah, that is fun.
Yeah, like I think Lee,
I mean,
you...
I figured the incest plot would carry me over the weird and twisted mark.
Yeah, like... yeah. Mm-hmm, no, like sure. you incorporated like perfect 90s tropes for sure.
Yep.
So yeah, no, I'll give you like a 7.5 on that one. Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So. That pretty solid, always around.
Yeah, we. So, I feel like we're all doing like pretty good recently. Are we getting soft? What's the deal?
Oh yeah, is that true? Or am I not as mean as I was?
Yeah, we need to pick some real fucking garbage movies.
I know, because this is the first movie that we've watched in a long time. Other than the one immediately preceding this one was also a quite watchable movie.
But yes, we'll pick 6 or 7 Jack Nicholson movies and string them all together. And, yeah, that'll be great.
Jesus Christ, Mary.
Although I didn't hate that one either. So,
oh, I did. I hate.
No, I'm talking about Witches of Eastwick.
Oh, okay. I still haven't watched that, but.
Oh well.
Okay.
All right.
So what's happening next time, everybody?
Yeah. So next episode is going to be our friend Erica, and she, I don't know how,
astonishingly.
As a person who was born in the 80s and grew up in the 90s, has not seen The Big Lebowski, but here we go. She's going to do The Big
staggering,
Lebowski.
Staggering how this is.
She may be the only person ever.
I can defend that because I didn't see The Big Lebowski until maybe like 3 or 4 years ago.
What?
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you're a weird fucker too then.
Well, yeah. That has been well established.
That's fair.
But it just never ended up in my field of vision for some reason.
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
I had seen some of the scenes, but I had never actually watched the whole movie.
Yeah.
Until you know 4 or 5 years ago. So I can respect, like, not everybody loves the Coen brothers.
Yeah. Well, also to be fair, like,
I mean, I do, but
well, all right. It was not a blockbuster. It's a cult classic that I think everyone born in our age range thinks is like the best movie ever.
I was just going to point that out. I think it has a lot of cultural capital in like people who went to college around the same time we did for one reason or another. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but that's our next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I look forward to how we're going to try to explain what happens in that movie to someone.
I know, yeah. Oh, that's going to be a 3.5 hour episode, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Should be good.
Strap in, people. Strap in.
Boy.
Yeah.
Okay, so with that, I guess we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Seth did it better, I think. Yeah.
Except Lee did a really good job this time.
And we'll bid you adieu, Claire.